we received an email from Elder Lionel Gitz in South Africa. They actually have seen the new moon, a number of families there, there Thursday night. And of course, it'll be our Thursday night here coming up. And just as they keep the weekly Sabbath at a different time, we also keep this day at a different time, as we have to go and look for the new moon and be observant to Yahweh's command for our area. And thankfully, Yahweh provided in such a way that we don't have to send out a new calendar or new dates or anything like that. So there's a blessing there. But we certainly would have been willing to go look this night if indeed it hadn't shown last night, if it hadn't been confirmed. But for trumpets, we have to ask, what does it mean to blow the trumpet? And should we blow the trumpet today? The reason I brought up Elder Lionel's email is because he mentioned the book of Zephaniah. Now, it's a small book, but it's a powerful one. And we're not going to take the time to read it today, but I would like you to take the time to read it later, because what's going to be covered today is also surmised in that book, in those three chapters. I had the opportunity to read it just before we came. But what does it mean to blow the trumpet, and should we blow the trumpet today? If you would, turn to Leviticus 23, verse 23. Let's start answering the questions. We find some things that stand out, not just that this day is special, but there are some things in this day that we are to do. In verse 23 it says, "Again Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the sons of Israel, saying, In the seventh month, on the first of the month, you shall have a rest, a reminder of blowing of the trumpet, and a holy convocation." So there's three things that stand out here: a rest, a reminder, and a gathering. I think we find that the rest is to refresh and focus on Yahweh rather than other things in our lives that so easily take us away from our focus on Yahweh. And of course, we really should be, even when we're doing things like our regular work, we should be keeping in mind Yahweh's word and His ways for our lives. Now, there's also a reminder. I think that reminder is to reflect on Yahweh's interventions, the times that there were the blowing of the trumpet. We can look at the deliverance from Egypt, you know, the trumpet blast to move forward. We can look at the overcoming of the enemies. Ezekiel chapter 34. Ezekiel chapter 34 and verse 11. It says, "Be sure to observe what I am commanding you this day. Behold, I am going to drive out the Amorite before you, and the Canaanite, and the Canaanite, and the Hittite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite." All these people that were not keeping their focus on Yahweh, that were not obedient to Him, that were not in His will, nor were they trying to be. But Israel was not just having this all done for them. They had to take steps forward and be involved. And today, I think we have to be involved. You know, our trumpet blasts go to war. Numbers 10, and starting there in verse 1, we read, "Yahweh spoke further to Moses, saying, Make yourself two trumpets of silver, of hammered work. You shall make them, and you shall use them for summoning the congregation and for having the camp set out." So there's a purpose for these trumpets. "When both are blown, all the congregation shall gather themselves to you at the doorway of the tent of meeting. Yet if only one is blown, then the leaders, the heads of the divisions of Israel, shall assemble before you. But when you blow an alarm, there's different types of blowings. Each one had a purpose. In verse 5 it says, but when you blow an alarm, the camps that are pitched on the east side shall set out. When you blow an alarm the second time, the camps that are pitched on the south side shall set out. An alarm is to be blown for them to set out. When convening the assembly, however, you shall blow without sounding an alarm. So it's not the alarm that is sounded for the gathering. That's a different sound. The priestly sons of Aaron, moreover, shall blow the trumpets. And this shall be for you a perpetual statute throughout your generations. When you go to war in the land against the adversary who attacks you, then you shall sound an alarm with the trumpets, that you may be remembered before Yahweh your Elohim and be saved from your enemies. So it seems that there's another purpose here that maybe we don't readily think about, that it also reminds Yahweh of his of us. Just kind of like the Sabbath. The Sabbath is a sign between us and him. And when Yahweh sees us keeping the Sabbath, and not just keeping it our own way, but keeping it his way, then he is well to do his will for us in a good way. He's willing to bless us. And there are times of special feasts. Today is one. And the trumpet blasts to gather on these special occasions. It occurs. And there's a time for gathering and rejoicing before Yahweh. And today is one of these days. Leviticus chapter 23 again, and verse 40. Now this is concerning the Feast of Tabernacles, but notice that it says, you shall rejoice before Yahweh your Elohim. Is it only for this feast? I wouldn't think so. I would think it would be for today as well, that we are to be joyful, that we're able to come out, do Yahweh's will, and do it well. It's not just about showing up. It's about doing something. It's about not just doing something, but doing the Father's will. I mean, it's very serious that we have to study his word. We have to know what he is telling us to do and then do it. Not grudgingly, not under compulsion, out of fear that he's going to strike us down, but out of respect for him. In times past, there were watchmen. Isaiah, for example, Isaiah 58 and verse 1. Isaiah 58 and verse 1, it says, cry loudly, do not hold back. Raise your voice like a trumpet and declare to my people their transgression and to the house of Jacob their sins. Is that something that we can do today? Can we tell people, even though we may not know exactly where the lost tribes are, we may know where some of Judah is, but is that to keep us, do we keep silent? I don't think so. Of course, Isaiah was told this back at his time. Let's go over to Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 33. What happens if we don't cry aloud? If we don't speak up? If we don't blow the trumpet? Ezekiel 33, starting in verse 1. And the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Son of man, speak to the sons of your people, and say to them, if I bring a sword upon a land, and the people of the land take one man from among them and make him their watchman, and he sees the sword coming upon the land and blows on the trumpet and warns the people, then he who hears the sound of the trumpet and does not take warning, and a sword comes and takes him away, his blood will be on his own head. Verse 5. He heard the sound of the trumpet, but did not take warning. Is everyone listening to us today? Or do they kind of brush us off and go, wow, yeah, I kind of like how, you know, their personality is, and I like what they do in the community. Boy, he's a good worker here. But boy, that religion they got, whew. He heard the sound of the trumpet, but did not take warning. His blood will be on himself, but had he taken warning, he would have delivered his life. But if the watchman sees the sword coming and does not blow the trumpet, and the people are not warned, and a sword comes and takes a person from them, he is taken away in his iniquity, but his blood will require from the watchman's hand. Now, is it only for me or for Elder John or Elder Don or Elder Meyer or others to speak up? You know, we all have a part in this. I'm here to serve. You're here to serve as well. And we do it in different ways so that the work grows, that the message gets out, and that people know. That they know not just what they're to be doing now, but what has happened and what will happen. Because Yahweh is very clear about what will happen. Let's go over to Revelation 11. Do we understand that we are witnesses to the peoples of the world today? I mean, literally, witnesses, both in action and in word. Revelation 11. And starting in verse 3. It says, and I will grant authority. Are we just going out on our own doing this? Can we take the glory and honor for doing what we're doing? No. I will grant authority to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy, will teach for 1260 days. Now, we're getting into some prophecy here of something that's coming. And it says, for 1260 days, that's 3.5 years, or 42 months. These are the two olive trees and two lampstands that stand before Yahweh of the earth. Who is that? And if anyone wants to harm them, fire flows out of their mouth and devours their enemies. And if anyone wants to harm them, he must be killed in this way. These have the power to shut up the sky so that the rain will not fall during the days of their prophesying. And they have power over the waters and to turn them into blood and to strike the earth with every plague as often as they desire. Could this be those that have Yahweh's Spirit that go before his throne day and night? Verse 4 says, these two olive trees and these two lampstands that stand before Yahweh of the earth. Do you know that there are two houses, Israel and Judah? That it's not just the Jews? we've been talking about this on Revealing the Truth as of recent. You might write these down, Isaiah 8, verse 14. We won't go there, but there are nations that are spoken of. Who are these nations? Are there two nations? Ezekiel 35, 10 speaks of two nations. Two families, Jeremiah 33 and verse 24. Two sisters, Ezekiel 23, 2 through 4. Two branches, two sticks, two loaves. What people are these? Who are these people? Scripture defines that these two olive trees and these two lampstands are two peoples. You know, Yahweh is going to be doing some things that are out of this world. And for us to be involved, I'm not sure exactly how it's all going to work out, but we're getting some insight from Yahweh's word on what's coming. And we are involved right now proclaiming in a small way. I mean, we don't have the kind of trumpets, physical trumpets, that some of these organizations have. But the trumpet that we have, which I think is multiple trumpets, each individual certainly has the ability to be involved. And we can work together and do this in a bigger way. And we are to tell the people what? Let's go over to Ezekiel chapter 2 and verse 7. Ezekiel 2 and verse 7. But you shall speak my words to them, whether they listen or not, for they are rebellious. Matthew 20:14. This is just a precursor. But Matthew 24 and verse 14, to answer the question, what are we to tell them? I think we're to tell them the whole word of Yahweh. But here specifically we're told Matthew 24:14. This evangel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come. Mark 16 and verse 15. He said to them, go into all the world and preach the evangel to all creation. What makes up the evangel? The good news. Of course, speaking of Yahshua, speaking of the coming kingdom. But there's other things that we have to speak out and tell people as well, especially those that are living their lives contrary to the way Yahshua lived his life. Not in obedience. I mean, many people are not in obedience to Yahweh. They may be morally good, but they're not walking with Yahweh as Yahshua walked. And we have to strive to walk as he walked, because he set the perfect example for us. And I think it's important that we tell people about some of the trouble that's coming. We need to alert people to wake up, to listen, to understand what is coming. Because people are, they have some beliefs of, just grace covers all, and no matter what happens, I'm going to float up to heaven someday and things will all be rosy. There are doctrines out there like the rapture, which are just totally unscriptural in the way that they present it. Now, there is a catching up, but where do we end up? And we'll touch upon that. But I think the point is that not all news is good news for everyone. Let's go over to Joel chapter 1 and starting there in verse 15. Joel chapter 1 verse 15. Alas, For the day of Yahweh is near, and it will come as destruction from the Almighty. Verse 1 of chapter 2. Blow the trumpet in Zion, and sound an alarm on my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble. For the day of Yahweh is coming. Surely it is near. Now, this was prophesied some 25 to 3,000 years ago. Are we closer now, maybe, to the return of Yahshua? And so many people today look at that as being, they don't understand how intense this day of Yahweh will be, and that it's coming just prior to Yahshua establishing the kingdom. Verse 2, it says, it's a day of darkness and of gloom, a day of clouds and thick darkness as the dawn is spread over the mountains. So there is a great and mighty people. There has never been anything like it, nor will there be again after it to the years of many generations. A fire consumes before them, and behind them a flame burns. The land is like the Garden of Eden before them, but a desolate wasteland behind them, and nothing at all escapes. So getting into some of the plagues that are going to be coming. Yahweh reveals that help will come for Yahweh's people in chapter 2 and verse 29 of Joel. It talks about his spirit being poured out. Now, there's a concept of the early and latter rains. To try to tie this in a little bit, you know, we read that the witnesses will be given some tremendous powers. I mean, there's no question about that. That is the word. And in Acts chapter 2, the disciples had the Spirit poured out upon them, and they were able to heal, they were able to do all these things. And Paul, I think one of his last healings was the individual that fell out of the room, the upper room that they were in, after that long night of speaking to one another, where Paul was explaining to them the word. And he covered him and prayed over him, evidently, and the person was okay. But we don't see people going into hospitals and emptying them because of healing powers. We don't see arms being restored, limbs being restored. We don't see that kind of thing. Not yet. And I think we can take a look at a little bit at, and talk a little bit about this. In verse 23, towards the end there, it talks about the early and latter rains. Let's go over to James 5 and verse 7. James and verse 7. Actually, let's start out in verse 8. Behold, the pay of the laborers who mowed your fields and which has been withheld by you cries out against you. Who's he talking to? And the outcry of those who did the harvesting has reached the ears of Yahweh of hosts. You have lived luxuriously on the earth. I mean, this is a time before tribulation, it looks like. James 5 and verse 5 now. James chapter 5 and verse 5. It says, you have lived luxuriously on the earth and led a life of wanton pleasure. You have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter. Could that be in reference to the day of Yahweh? Verse 6, you have condemned and put to death the righteous man. He does not resist you. Therefore, be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Master. The farmer waits for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it, until it gets the early and late rains. Again, it's talking about the early and late rains. Verse 8, you too be patient, strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Master is near. Are they talking about the end of the age? Do not complain, brethren, against one another, so that you yourselves may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing right at the door. They were expecting this soon. And that was 2,000 years ago, almost now. Verse 10, as an example, brethren, of suffering and patience, take the prophets who spoke in the name of Yahweh. We count those blessed who endured. You have heard of the endurance of Job and have seen the outcome of Yahweh's dealings, that Yahweh is full of compassion and is merciful. But look at what he also did in context of what James is saying here. In verse 17, if you go down, you'll read about Elijah. And it says Elijah was a man with a nature like ours, and he prayed earnestly that it would not rain. And it did not rain on the earth for 3 years and 6 months. Then he prayed again, and the sky poured rain, and the earth produced its fruit. Could we possibly be given that kind of authority? It says the witnesses will be given authority. Yahweh has done this in the past with certain individuals, like Elijah. It all ties in. I think we can see a picture if we put these pieces of puzzle, which seem to be like a piece, like a puzzle that needs to be put together. But did you notice that it talks about the Master? It talks about Yahweh and the Master, Yahshua, the Father, Yahweh, being involved. In Revelation, chapter 6 and verse 16, who is involved with the tribulation? Who is involved on the day of Yahweh? Is it only Yahweh? And we're getting into some of the seal plagues here, some of the troubles that are coming. And the people said to the mountains and to the rocks, fall on us and hide us from the presence of him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. Who is the Lamb? For the great day of their wrath has come, and who is able to stand? Yahshua is going to be involved with the day of Yahweh, with the tribulation that's coming. And they are involved with us right now. And I think we have to be prepared for whatever is coming. And I think we get some insight into just what is coming. And it's nearer now than it ever has been. But it's interesting to take a little look at some of this prophecy and see where we may be playing a role in the end times. A bigger role than we are even now. But right now we have to be dedicated, we have to endure, we have to overcome different trials and troubles in our own lives, collectively or rather, you know, individually for the most part. But we have to keep in focus that there's work to do, that there has to be this word presented in a understandable way to the people. I mean, we've been given the understanding. It's our responsibility now to share that understanding with others so that they might come into the fold, that they might come out of the world. And what does Scripture say? Come out of her, my Babylon, come out of her, my people, lest you partake of their plagues. There are plagues coming. Now, some of the plagues that are described, let's go over to Revelation chapter 8, since we're on the subject of trumpets. Because there are trumpet blasts, there are things are going to unfold, but we haven't seen anything like this that is described just yet, not in earnest. Chapter 8 and verse 7 is the first trumpet. The first sounded, and there came hail and fire mixed with blood, and they were thrown to the earth. And a third of the earth was burned up, and a third of the trees were burned up, and all green grass was burned up. Hail and fire mixed with blood. Have we seen anything like that? I don't think we've seen that yet. The second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood. Have we seen that? And a third of the creatures that were in the sea and had life, they died. And a third of the ships were destroyed. Verse 10, the third angel sounded, and a great star fell. This is the third trumpet. The third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch. And it fell on a third of the rivers, and of the springs of the waters. And the name of the star was called Wormwood, and a third of the waters became wormwood. And many men died from the waters because they were made bitter. There's very little drinkable water even today on the earth. An example was given that if you take the world's water supplies, as far as drinkable water, you could look at it as the total waters that are available on the earth is like a gallon jug of water. Well, take just one capful out of that. That is really the drinkable water that is available to human beings on this earth. The rest is salinated, in many cases, just by our own doing. I mean, polluted. So it's really not fit for drinking. So if and it's not if, I mean when this wormwood hits and sours the waters, will people die? It says men died from the waters. They tried to drink them because there wasn't anything else to drink. I mean, these are not your feel-good, fuzzy type of things that are really proclaimed out in the world by ministers that are teaching about grace and how we're all going to be raptured and this and that. And it's troublesome to really see and gather the thoughts of just how severe this will be, just how intense it will be. And I think sometimes we don't want to hear it. I want to hear those good things. Well, isn't that human nature? But these are Yahweh's words. And what he says is coming will come. It says the fourth trumpet here, the fourth angel sounded, the trumpet, and a third of the sun and a third of the moon and a third of the stars were struck, so that a third of them would be darkened, and the day would not shine for a third of it, and the night in the same way. And I looked and heard an eagle flying in mid heaven, saying with a loud voice, "Woe, woe to those who dwell on the earth, because of the remaining blast of the trumpet of the three angels who were about to sound." We get into this fifth trumpet, and it talks about seeing a star from heaven falling to the earth, about the opening of a bottomless pit, about the smoke coming out, the locust. In verse 4, these locusts, and for Yahweh's will to be worked out here, he says, "Do not hurt the grass of the earth, nor any..." They were told not to hurt the grass on the earth, nor any green thing, nor any tree, but only the men, this would include the women as well, who do not have the seal of Yahweh on their foreheads. So Yahweh's people are protected. It doesn't say anything about rapturing them out. It does talk about being protected by Yahweh. For what purpose? Will we be able to say anything? Will we be able to speak? Will we be able to say, "Look, this is happening because..." And notice how the seal is on the forehead. Revelation 22:4, the seal of the names, the Father's name, the Son's name. And people think, "Oh, those are Hebrew names. Those aren't important." They are more important than many people recognize. It goes on to the sixth trumpet here. And then the sixth angel in verse 13 sounded, "And I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar, which is before Yahweh. One saying to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, 'Release the four angels who are bound at the great Euphrates River, or the river Euphrates. And the four angels who had been prepared for the hour and the day and the month and the year were released so that they would kill a third of mankind. The number of the armies of the horsemen was 200 million. I heard the number of them. And this is how I saw the vision of the horses and those who sat on them, the riders and the breastplates, the color of the fire and of the hyacinth and of the brimstone. The heads of the horses are like heads of lions, and out of their mouth proceeds fire and smoke and brimstone. And if you're looking at a vision, and you're at a time period when you have no idea about tanks and guns and missiles, and I mean, how are you going to describe what you're seeing? This may have been a description of people and armament, tanks. I mean, it does talk about the breastplates, the different colors, and then of course the out of their mouths proceed fire and smoke. You know, fire, armor, you know, missiles, things like that. Could be. It's kind of hard to put yourself back at that time. You know, of course, John was being given all this revelation. He's writing it down for us today. He never heard of anything like a missile or a tank, anything like that. But it says in verse 18, a third of mankind was killed by these three plagues, by the fire and the smoke and the brimstone that proceeded out of their mouths. For the power of the horses is in their mouths and in their tails. You know, if you ever look at like an Apache helicopter, the armament is actually kind of placed in the back, and those things have a sting when they're released, and they shoot out. It's a way to describe those things. It says, the rest of mankind who were not killed by these plagues did not repent of the works of their hands so as to not worship demons and the idols of gold and silver and brass and the stone and the wood which can neither see nor hear nor walk. What are we worshiping today? What are many people worshiping today? I mean, not us in particular, but even these things can get in our way of worshiping the Father properly. You know, getting cars, getting houses, getting our career and focusing on it, and just disregarding Yahweh. They become idols of gold and brass and stone and wood. Verse 21, they did not repent of their murders, nor of their sorceries, nor of their immorality, nor of their thefts. The immorality of this world is quite bad. There are I was watching something the other day. They are now seeing slave trading within this country. That's maybe in a small way, but nevertheless, traders of children. These type of things are going on over in the East Coast, down in Florida Panhandle and areas like that. Terrible. But there's good news coming. The last trumpet will sound. And the last trumpet blast signals Yahshua's return to reign and to establish the kingdom. Let's go over to 1 Corinthians 15. You know, some may think that Yahweh is just, you know, in the Old Testament especially, they point to him as being, oh, that very angry person back at that time. Well, that anger was poured out on the people at times because of their disobedience. The things that are happening today, bestiality, these horrendous things are going on. We don't normally hear about it. We don't normally see it. Nor do we want to see it. But it's out there, and just terrible things that are going on in the world. And we are to come out of that and not even go close to it. But there are plagues coming for those that live contrary to Yahweh. And those are some of the most horrendous things. I mean, there are things that might seem minor, but they still are things against Yahweh. They are still things that aren't correct in His sight. I mean, we see things. I was reading through Genesis the other day, and there was. Let's see if I can find it real quick. You know, we know that Scripture says that Yahweh doesn't change. His character, the way He does things, there may be some changes that occur. There is a change in the law, the fact that we don't offer up physical sacrifices. We offer up spiritual sacrifices. We don't offer burnt offerings. We do help with the work financially. We help in other ways. We pray for it. We take many studies to others. We do these things. But Yahweh does have a way of doing things, and Yahweh deals with people as he will. Yeah. Oh, here. Okay. Well, I'll just read this to you. Genesis 38 and verse 10. Let me back up. In verse 38, and it came about at the time that Judah departed from his brothers and visited a certain Adullamite, whose name was Hera. Judah saw that there was a daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua, and he took her and went into her. So she conceived and bore a son and named him Ur. And she conceived again and bore a son and named him Onan. She bore still another son and named him Shelah, and it was at Shezeb that she bore him. Now Judah took a wife for Ur, his firstborn, and her name was Tamar. But Ur, Judah's firstborn, was evil in the sight of Yahweh. So what did Yahweh do to him? It says, so Yahweh took his life. Are the things in the world evil? Is it any wonder that we're told that He's going to take lives? No different than what He did in the Old Testament. Yet ministers, others point back to the Old Testament, he was a mean person back there. Come on. He doesn't change. He was loving and kind back in the Old Testament, just as He was stern and firm, even to the point of destroying people, even His people, because of why? Because as disobedient children, they disregarded Him, and they suffered. They suffered death, many of them. Going on here in verse 10, there's another thing that happened, and it says it's described here, what He did was displeasing in the sight of Yahweh. Well, that doesn't sound like it was that evil, but it was displeasing to Yahweh. And what did He do? He took His life also. I mean, we have to be so careful what we do and not be careless with Yahweh's word and to seek Yahweh's will in our lives. Certainly we make mistakes and we strive to overcome, but we don't want to go on displeasing and doing things that are evil. Yahweh won't tolerate it forever. And there's some things coming, some trumpets that are going to be blown that are going to put an end to it. And that last trumpet sounds over in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 51. Getting back on track here, I just wanted to point that out because, you just see how certain people want to say certain things and they aren't true. We find that Yahweh does not change, that the things are coming are similar to, I shouldn't say similar, in the sense that what is coming is going to be something that has never happened before to this world and is something that never will happen again. Yahweh promises that. This is Yahweh's word. His word is good, and His word is the truth, and His promises will be kept. 1 Corinthians 15:51, "Behold, I tell you a mystery. We will not all sleep, but we will all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised imperishable, and we will be changed." He believed this for himself, Paul did. You know, at the end of his life, he said, "I have run the race. I have finished the race." He knew he was going to be dead, but he recognized that that Yahweh had seen him through the difficulties that he went through. And even though he struggled with himself and wrongs that he did, he was still able to overcome because he focused on Yahweh, he repented, he admitted that through Messiah he was able to have forgiveness for those shortcomings as long as he kept his focus on Yahweh through Yahshua. In Revelation 11, we didn't turn there, but let's go there because it's the final trumpet that sounds. It's this last trump where things are finally come to a conclusion. It says in verse 15 there, "Then the seventh angel sounded, and there were loud voices in heaven, saying, The kingdom of the world has become the kingdom of our sovereign and of his Messiah, and he will reign forever and ever. And the 24 elders who sat on the thrones before Yahweh fell on their faces and worshiped Yahweh, saying, We give thanks, O Yahweh El Shaddai, who are and who were, because you have taken your great power and have begun to reign." That is good news for all of us. As long as we're in Yahweh's will, and as long as we're reaching out and trying to help others as well. That's all a part of it. We have to be careful of what we do. And sometimes what we do is not seemingly right in others' eyes. Just as I may not be able to understand why someone does something, but you know, I don't fully understand all the circumstances. Some may not be able to see what is done you know, in our lives, maybe a decision that we've made, and yet it might be the very best decision that could have been made, and yet it's regarded as, oh, that was bad, I would have never done that, or this and that. These type of things come up, and we, I think, for the most part, want to believe that Yahweh, and we know that Yahweh is loving and kind and merciful. But there's also that firmness, that the other aspect. Whereas if we're not doing what's right, we will be punished. And there are decisions that are made based upon actions, cause and effect. In Revelation 11, of course, we just read about that seventh final trump. Let's go over to Revelation. Let's see if I can make sure I'm following my outline here. If we're doing what's right, and if the things that we do, if they're in line with Yahweh, with His will, and we have overcome to the end. Overcome means overcoming obstacles. and making sure we pick the right over the wrong and continuing on. And not just doing that for a little while, but doing that long term. And making sure that we can say, as Paul did at the end of his life, I've run the race. Now there awaits a crown. We have to be seeking Yahweh's will. And in the end, Yahweh's people end up ruling with Yahshua on the earth. 1 Peter chapter 5. First Peter chapter 5 and verse 4 says, and the chief shepherd appears, when the chief shepherd appears, who is that? That's of course Yahshua. You will receive the unfading crown of glory. Is that reminiscent of Revelation 3 and 21? Speaking of even the assembly of Laodicea, who we know whose deeds were not hot nor cold, but there were, you know, it was being spoke to all the assemblies, being spoke to individuals. We can't say, well, I'm with this assembly, so I'm good to go. It's an individual, the judgment is going to fall individually. You know, there can be some collective judgment, but there's also the judgment individually. In verse 21, it says, to he who overcomes, I will grant to him, the individual, to sit down with me on my throne as I have also overcame and sat down with my Father on his throne. It's a promise. Yahweh and Yahshua cannot lie. And neither should we lie. And we may question about how we might, you know, well, I don't think I lie. Well, what if you're teaching something that isn't scriptural? Is that a lie? It says that of the 144,000, not that we have to need to go there, but I recognize that you know, they had no lie. There's no lie found on their lips. They were teaching what was true and what was correct. Otherwise, they would have been lying, wouldn't they? So we need to be making sure that we teach the truth and that we have no lie found on our lips. Not to one another, not to others that are out there, to no one. Let's go over to 1 Thessalonians. First Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 15. Be on guard. I'm in 2 Timothy. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 15, starting there. First Thessalonians on and for 1 Timothy. Okay. Pages are getting stuck together here. I know you're there already. For this we say to you by the word of Yahweh, 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 15. We say this to you by the word of Yahweh, that we who are alive and remain until the coming of the Master will not precede those who have fallen asleep. The dead will rise first, in other words. For Yahweh himself will descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trumpet of Elohim. And the dead and Messiah will rise first. Then those who are alive and remain will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet Yahweh, or to meet the Master in the air. And so we shall always be with the Master. But where is the Master going? He's coming to the earth. He's coming to the earth to establish the coming kingdom, Yahweh's kingdom. You read of us reigning on the earth in Revelation 5:10. Acts 1:11 gives a good description of just where Yahshua is going, actually. Acts 1 and verse 11 says, "And they said, Men of Galilee, why do you stand looking into the sky? This Yahshua has been taken up from you into heaven, will come in just the same way as you have watched him go into heaven." So he's coming back. And that's a promise to us. And the disciples saw Yahshua ascend, and these angels had mentioned that, this is how he's going to return. Just as you saw him ascending. So we have these things that we can put together and we can understand just what is going to happen. Now, there was something here in also in 1 Thessalonians 5:2, starting and going through 8, and we'll wrap this up here with these verses. But I think we have to ask ourselves, what good is a tool if it is not used for the purpose that it was built for? And we'll see just why we need to be concerned about that. "For you yourselves know full well that the day of Yahweh will come just like a thief in the night. While they are saying peace and safety, then destruction will come upon them suddenly like labor pains upon a woman with child, and they will not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness, that the day would overtake you like a thief. For you are all sons of light and sons of the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. So let us not sleep as others do, but let us be alert and sober. For those who sleep do their sleep at night, and those who get drunk at night. But since we are of the day, let us be sober, having put on the breastplate of faith and of love, and as a helmet, the hope of salvation. Could we also say a trumpet to remind and witness, a reminder of what has happened, and a witness to what will happen? What good is it if we have a tool and is not used for the purpose it was built for? We are given mouths to speak. We are given the tools needed to proclaim Yahweh's word and to go forth. So, to ask the same question as was asked earlier, what does it mean to blow the trumpet? It means to do Yahweh's will. Should we blow the trumpet today? The answer is a definite yes. May Yahweh bless us to that end and to the end of all of eternity, because that's a promise to his people, that there is eternal life and that we want to be a part of that, I'm sure, and we need to make sure that we blow the trumpet and announce to people just what has happened, what is coming, and what we should be doing today. May Yahweh bless.